Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And this is August the 5th, 2011. We give that date now so that you'll know whether it's a live show or if it's recorded. I'm sorry we're starting a little late tonight, but we are calling out one of our authors who is in England. And it took a little bit to get the connections right. And Guy, over there, it's the middle of the night, isn't it?
Yeah, right now it's 1 a.m. in the morning, so it's slightly dark, but nevertheless nice and quiet, and it'll give us a chance to work better, I think, from this side. So, cause the psychic noise is a little bit lower because people are asleep.
Uh-huh. Well, that's what we figured. I appreciate that you stayed up this late to talk to us. You're on the other side of the world here. Thought you might have fallen asleep. We'd have to wake you up. Okay. All right. Well, we're speaking to Guy Needler, and he's in England. Where are you in England?
I'm in a little village. The English call a hamlet called Portway, and that is 10 miles south of Birmingham. Birmingham is in the centre of the UK in an area called the West Midlands.
So you're very close to Birmingham then.
Yes, with literally 10 miles, which is 20 minutes drive in a car.
Okay. All right. Well, Guy was over here when we did our conference in June where we highlighted a lot of our speakers and our authors. So you got to see a little bit of America anyway. You got to see Arkansas anyhow.
Yeah, I actually thought Arkansas and it was absolutely beautiful. The atmosphere from both from the nature's perspective and also from the spiritual perspective was fantastic. My wife made a point of noting that the Ozark Mountains looked particularly beautiful as we flew into Rogers.
Yeah, usually everybody says how green it is. It may not be right now, but it's usually green. That's the word. It's so green.
But right now, we feel like we're in the oven. This whole part of the United States has been have record heat waves. We haven't had any rain. It's been about a month. They said that's it's been over 100. We're having the hottest in the nation right here in the middle of the United States, and it doesn't make any sense. But just another week or so, and then we'll be headed over to your part of the world. Then they can have the heat. Okay. All right, but Guy Needler is one of our authors who wrote the book, The History of God. And that's an interesting title, and that's what we're going to be talking about tonight, is his book. Now, Guy, before we get into that, I want you to tell the people about yourself. I would like to go back to the beginning, you know, about the person so they can understand how you got into all this. Tell them about yourself.
Okay. Well, I've always been interested in the spiritual side of life and metaphysical side of life right from a very early age. I can remember being interested in things as psychic phenomena, UFOs, life on other planets. And the spiritual aspect of religion from probably from being 8 or 9. And I was always interested in what I was seeing out of the corner of my eye. And just as an example of one of the things I noted in the Transformation Conference was I can remember being 8 years old and lying in my bed and looking across the way between my house and my next door neighbor's house. And seeing the wind, and the wind looked a little bit like if you imagine when you see hot air rising and you see the distortion in the image that you see behind the hot air, it's like a ripple effect. I remember seeing that going up and over the roof of my next door neighbor's house and around the chimney. And that's quite interesting because when I went back to my father's house just before the Transformation Conference, I went into that very same bedroom and I realized that there was more going on than met the eye, because to see that wall of that house, I was looking through with my what I now realize was my third eye, through two sets of walls to see that. And I thought that was quite incredible to remember that.
Huh.
So that was one of my first experiences. I woke up several times within dreams to be fully aware, stop the dream dead, and realize that I'm in a completely different environment, not only in terms of not being on the earth, but being in a different dimension as well. And at least twice I've recognized I've been astral traveling, because there's a completely different feel about where you are. Although you're on earth and you're out, or you're either in the house or you're outside, everything has a completely different feel about it, and different visual appearance and different interface with you, as it were. It's very interesting to see the difference between how you perceive the earth as an astral traveler, somebody who's outside of their body, compared to being within the body and being in the physical whilst being part of the physical. So I've been interested in and working with this for a long, long time. And as I got more and more interested, I started to read some of the metaphysical books of the day. Some of them, specifically one, gave me an excellent text in how to meditate. And I started to meditate on a very, very frequent basis, every day for 1 or 2 hours. It got to the point where I was meditating so often that I think that I was starting to lose my anchor point with the physical world. And in one of my waking meditations that I used to do when I was waking up in the morning, I'd lie in bed and I'd sort of sit and meditate for another 15 to 20 minutes. I suddenly had four white-robed men in front of me in my mind's eye, all smiling and very very loving and very caring and nodding sagely to me. And they didn't say a word, but I knew exactly what they were saying to me. And the objective of the communication with me was that what I was doing was right, what I believed in was absolutely right, but it wasn't the right time for me. So I needed to work on my earthly work first. And from that day on, really my intensity in being involved with metaphysical and spiritual aspects of existence dropped right off onto the back burner. And although I kept one eye open, rather like a cat half asleep, and was still sort of interested from a passing interest sort of thing, I never really got involved with it. And I started to become more interested and more involved in becoming successful at work, where I rose through the ranks of the organization I worked for at the time, getting to middle management, gaining 2 master's degrees, becoming a chartered engineer. Mm-hmm. And then...
But really, guy, engineer, aren't you?
So yes, initially I trained as a mechanical engineer, then I trained as an electrical electronics engineer. And I'm now starting to realize that all of these earthly things I've learned have given me an arsenal, a toolkit of ways of explaining or having information given to me from spirit, from the source entity, from the origin, and from the other entities I'm in communication with, to explain to the people on earth, initially through the book, The History of God, the concepts about the workings of the universe, how it's constructed, how we can move through it, how we can live with it. So that was extremely important. And later, when I finished what was obvious, I was starting to get towards that magic age of 42 when you start to become more spiritual in your outlook anyway, or one does. A friend of mine introduced me to Reiki, which I became a Reiki master very, very quickly. I think it was within 18 months. And that very same friend who I was working with, within the engineering company I was with, he moved to Sweden to work for a company called Saab. Saab make military aeroplanes, but they also make motor cars. And he was in contact with another Reiki master, and this Reiki master told him that he had to take me to a certain place on a river outside of a little village called Trollhättan, which is just south of Gothenburg. And it was on this river that I received a heavy attunement from what my friend and my wife, who was there as well, because we were having a holiday over there to see my friend, realized now was very otherworldly individuals that were there using energetic craft to allow them to come into our dimension and work with me and reattune me. And from that day on, I've been more and more aware and getting more and more aware on a daily and a weekly basis of the worlds of spirit and being in contact with them. Just to finalise, the Reiki then progressed on to taking a course that my healer, my energy healer, was starting. And my energy healer was a first-generation student of Barbara Brennan. For the listeners out there, you might know that the Hands of Light book and Light Emerging books, which are excellent texts for people who want to learn how to do energy healing, but by knowing it from a scientific perspective. And I started to get involved with that, and it took 4 years to go through a whole course and graduate. But that gave me the absolute toolkit to enable me to start to heal and start to be in contact with spirit in a deeper perspective. And some of the techniques that were used in that healing course to raise the frequencies to get in contact with psychic surgeons allowed me to move up and down the frequencies within the human body to the seventh level. And whilst I was doing this, I noticed I could go higher, up to a tenth level, and then later to a 14th level. And I can remember quite vividly my healing instructor giving me a very severe reprimanding for going beyond what was being taught and telling me to be grounded. But I continued with this, and I found I could go higher and higher using these methods, which were initially quite mechanical by using a method where you open the chakras to get yourself to those other levels. And eventually I was able to go to higher levels above what I recognize as being those associated with the human form, and I discovered that there were three more levels associated with the human form. Most healers and spiritualists recognize there being seven levels that are equivalent to the same levels as the human chakras and the seven levels of the human aura associated with those. And I've established that there's 10, and beyond that there's 14 levels which are associated with the physical universe, and I started to go to the 14th level. And when I started to go to the 14th level, I started to get in contact with other spiritual entities, and then I therefore managed to talk to them and get more experience and more efficient in how I moved through the frequencies. And eventually I got to levels that were what I can only describe as being the 100th level, where I made initial contact with another entity called a source entity, which announced itself as a source entity, but later said that it was our God. It was the entity that created us to help it evolve. Much later, it then told me that it was part of another entity called the Origin, the Absolute. And the Absolute is that is described by many religions as being evident there is. And the Origin itself is evolving, and it created the source entity to help it evolve. And there's 11 source entities on top of the source entity that we have. And they're all created to help the Origin evolve. And in turn, they've created their own multiverse and populated it with their own individualized units of themselves to experience existence in minute detail to allow them to evolve, the source entities to evolve and to allow the Origin to evolve. So that takes us up to the current day, basically. And I've recently some new news, Dolores, which I've recently had done some of the channeling that's going on with my second set of texts to do with another book called Beyond the Source, has established that the Origin.
Julia had a question.
No, I was just wondering when you're talking about. I was getting a visual, and I was just wondering if. I remember that you had some diagrams in your book, and I'm trying to remember them off the top of my head, but if I saw anything, I think you had diagrams.
Yes,
it's another book I'm thinking about. But did they ever show you? Did you ever get a visual of the so what you're saying is there's the one origin, and then it creates the 12 source entities, correct?
Mm. Yeah, and each one is over its own universe.
Right.
That's right.
Did they ever give you a diagram? I'm seeing a diagram. Did they ever give you anything like that?
Well, yes. In the manuscript for Beyond the Source, I've done a drawing of how it looked originally, because the source entities are, if you like, the second experiment. Originally, the origin tried to create 12 of itself outside of itself,
right.
And that failed. And if you imagine them as like spheres, that's the best way to think of it, as spheres within a larger sphere. That's the only way I can really understand it myself.
Yeah, that's kind of, it's almost like a clock is what I keep seeing, and it's like broken into segments, you know, it's like 12...
Like a pie or...
Like a pie, or it's a round, and then it's like they come off of that, you know, that, yeah, it's something, so that'd be like your sphere, I guess.
Okay, yes. I remember the diagram. Yeah, basically there was a round circle representing the source entity in this instance,
mm-hmm.
and then... Below that is like a hierarchical structure, the sort of thing you see in business diagrams to show the chief executive officer, then the principals of, you know, the presidents, the vice presidents, and then the management. That was a sort of a diagram, and that diagram has showed the source entity, and then it showed the dimensions. So there's 12 dimensions below there. And then it showed that each dimension was split up into three for three different dimensional components, which the source entity called a tritave of three dimensional components that make up one full dimension. And each of those tritaves is again split up again into 12 frequency bands. And one of those frequency bands, in our instance, would equal all of the possible frequencies that we would ever experience or be able to measure whilst being in the physical. So that
when
diagram...
When you say all the possible frequencies, is that like saying all the possible possibilities?
Yeah, so if I elaborate a little bit further, uh-huh. if we consider that we are in... There has to be a basis first for the first full dimension. So the first full dimension is actually a cumulative of the three dimensional subcomponents. So we're in the first dimension, which is composed of the first three dimensional components to create that full dimension, and then we are the bottom frequency within those 12 frequency piles. So if we think about this 12 dimensions, and each of them we've got three dimensional components, so 12 times three, and then we have 12 frequency bands within each of those 12 dimensions and three dimensional subcomponents. You have 12 times 3 times 12. So that's 433. But actually it becomes 430 because the first three create the first full dimension. After that, everything else is a separate permutation of space. So that quick calculation tells me that the source entity has got 430 different universes, each universe being a permutation of space. So it's not just a case of dimensions and frequencies. It's that all those together create the different universes, which is our multiverse, which is mind-boggling when you think there's potentially 430 versions of the universe in different frequencies and dimensions.
So in essence, that could be your parallel universes.
Yes, they can be, absolutely, yes.
Okay.
In fact, they are parallel universes because they're all existing within the same multiverse.
Right,
yeah.
Just different versions of the same theme or something like that.
Yeah, it can be something that's very subtle or something that's very big that makes the difference. Even down to, for instance, the fact that some parts of some of those permutations of space might not have a physical condition at all. Might be purely energetic, or it might be totally physical, as we are now, right now. And some parts of the physical universe, and certainly on Earth, are starting to experience heightened states of of frequency as we're starting to come out of the lower frequencies and start to become more aware. We raise the base frequency of the Earth and therefore the universe.
And
so there's 430 different parallel universes out there.
Universes for each person.
That's one of the things we've been getting, is that all the possibilities and probabilities of every decision that a person makes.
Yeah, and that's where I'm trying. If that's what that's not the same thing. That's what I'm wondering. If that's.
Oh no, that's completely different. Now then, there's something else that one of the entities called Byron told me earlier, and. Later on, I got a better description from the source entity when I was preparing the presentation for the transformation conference. Mm-hmm. Was that time doesn't exist at all?
Right.
Linear time is invented by man for navigational purposes and trying to control how we work, basically. So the reality of it is that we exist in what we call event space, or what the entity called Byron and the source entity called event space. An event space is effectively, as Julia's just described, where we exist in pockets of events as we are now. Although I'm in England, in the centre of England, not far from a place called Birmingham, and it's in clock time, 1 o'clock in the morning, Saturday morning, actually I'm in the same event space as you guys in Rogers. And as the guys in the studio, we are in the same event space. So everything exists in event space conditions. So although we are in different areas, we are linked together through these different events. And the source entity explained it even further. He said that you consider event space as a rubber band ball, with each rubber band representing a particular event space, and each event space is in contact with the other event spaces, or the rubber bands are in contact with each other rubber band, either directly through direct contact or indirectly through contact through other events. And as a result of that, you can traverse the different event spaces. So clearly you could time travel if you wanted to use clock time as methodology of describing this. So all of these things, being a ball, are existing at the same time, or in the same event space, as it were. So all the different events, for instance, if for instance this phone call had failed, that would have created another event space, which would have included myself here. But because the phone call was a robust phone call, and we're able to talk now, we're now in a different event space, and therefore everything that happens after this communication we're having after the metaphysical hour finishes becomes another series of events that are happening or could happen. So everything that has happened is happening and could happen, and all those different permutations of happeningness are happening simultaneously, concurrently, whilst also being separate.
Well, we can do. In order for us to understand it linearly, that's the way our minds work, we have to do it.
But what I got, because like you're saying, we could time travel. If that's all we have to do is remove that time element, and we actually can.
Yeah, that was what they said in my book, that man will never travel in space as long as he is trapped in time. You have to get out of time in order to be able to do it.
Yeah, that was very clear in what you were saying there, is like that is the element. As long as that isn't there, then all we do is hop on one of those rubber bands, and any place, we could be any place. We could go do anything.
That's absolutely right. And the comment that Dolores has just made there about man will never travel in space while he's trapped in time is an absolutely perfect explanation for it. Because whilst we're trapped in time, we're still in the same event space, in essence. We're not going to be able to move from event space to event space. So we need to expand our awareness and our consciousness to be able to do that. And one of the things that I've picked up from the communications I've had with the source entity is that when we become more evolved and progress through the frequencies and the dimensions, our abilities to move through the dimensions of frequencies becomes a functional feature of our self, of our energetic self, and we can do it at will of our own volition. Some of the entities that we come across who visit us in crafts that we call UFO, which are either mechanical constructs or energetic constructs, they do that using a mechanical means of creating or distorting the dimensions or creating little loopholes or wormholes, if you want to call it that. And that enables them to hop through different event spaces and different dimensions by using the mechanical means, whereas if we're more evolved, we don't need to have those mechanical means. We can do it instantaneously by pure thought.
Yeah, that's what I've written about. They found a way to raise their vibrations and frequencies so they disappear. They actually move into the other dimension that way because of their changing frequencies.
I just got the most interesting visual. First of all, I want to know what you must be doing something that's affecting me so that I'm getting these visuals. So can you confirm that for me?
Talk to you, I think about what I have a picture in my mind, and that picture in my mind gets projected out. So you're picking up the images that I'm presenting within my mind to explain
in
words.
The visual I got, I have never seen before, and it was just like, oh, wow, but how would you even put that into words about how these others on these other dimensions, and it was kind of just doing different ones. But what I was seeing was, and here again, I'm not sure how to put this into words. It's almost like a wobble, something like almost like air wobbling. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, absolute sense.
But it's something that's how it's used. That's how they move through. Dimensions. It's like they catch a wobble, or they make a wobble, or they distort something. They move it in, and then that's how they move through it. Something like
that. What they do is they confuse the dimensional space that they're in by by creating a false dimension, and they have to false dimension and false frequency, and they have to keep rotating that in a random fashion to enable them to exist in another dimension or another frequency whilst being within their own frequency. Because they have to maintain their own environment within the machine or the energetic construct that they make to enable them to maintain their own functionality, because otherwise they would start to lose their memory of what they are, lose their functions of what they are. So they have to create like a bubble, a bit like a bathysphere or a submarine, to come down lower into the frequencies whilst maintaining the higher frequencies so they can continue to operate. And to do that, they create a field around themselves which is ever-changing in frequency and dimension, so they can slip between the dimensions, fooling each dimension into thinking that it's part of that dimension whilst it's not part of that dimension.
That's what they said in one of my books. That's why they have to be in something that helps them contain their own energy as they move. Otherwise, the energy would be dispersed among all the other energies.
What I'm seeing, like, right, you talked about how in the beginning of your talk that you looked out that window and you were seeing the air, and it was kind of like how the heat makes that thing. It's kind of like, that's what I'm seeing again, is like that kind of a thing. So, to where it's like that. I can't think
it's
of the
like
word.
Like a mirage.
Like a mirage. I was wanting to say mirage, but it's like that same thing where the heat, you know, that vapor, it's like that.
Rises off.
You know,
the
so is it
highway.
Something like that that's created around there?
Yeah. Now, if I go back to when I was in Sweden and I had my first attunement, when I was on this, for the listeners, I received my attunement from, I classified as aliens at that time, but there were definitely beings that were from our planet or dimension. When I received that attunement, I almost straight away was almost able to perceive those craft, and that's exactly what the same sort of thing that I observed was that the area was distorted, rather like the hot air rising and giving you a distorted image of what's behind it. And eventually,
okay.
I got Yeah, I was able to, by concentrating, using the third eye, see through that. And momentarily, I was able then, at that point, to see these craft, which were almost overlaid in 3D over the trees in the background. So I saw the image of these craft still looking like trees and river and the
but you knew something was there.
But it was there. It was clearly there, and it was all very distorted, like exactly the same as you're describing, Julia. It was just like hot air rising. That's staying stationary.
And now my head's hurting.
But, you know, Guy, going back to the beginning, you're talking about moving through all these levels to get up to the source entity. Would the levels be the same as dimensions? Or do you define it differently? The levels?
The levels that I was using originally were, if you like, frequency levels. So they wouldn't be the same as dimensions as such. Although I'm now starting to understand that sometimes I go through dimensions and don't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like I've created a link with the source entity and the origin, and I go straight to them now. I can literally be sitting down at my desk at work, for instance, and instantaneously be in contact with one of them. It's that quick now.
Well, because that's all it takes is another energy, and then you can tap right into any any energy anywhere, correct?
Absolutely. You know, that's right. The interesting thing is that it still is easier to talk to the source entity, to rise up the levels to need to do that, because obviously because we are where we are, we have to move up to a certain level, i.e. the top of this base frequency, to allow us to talk to or get in contact with that part of us which is still energetic, and therefore start to communicate with the source entity and the origin. But I found out that it's much easier to talk to the source entity, and it's much easier to talk to the origin, because as an energetic entity, even though I'm part of me projected into the physical, as it is with you guys, because I'm created from source entity energy, I mean, because we're all created from source entity energy, and we're all individualized units of source entity energy, i.e. we're all individualized units of God.
Right.
I find it easier to talk to God than I can when I'm talking to the other source entities, because they are completely different frequency sets.
Oh, okay. And you're in this frequency. Is it that, maybe that's the reason you're in this? You can talk to this entity.
Okay. It's almost like there's a completely different signature.
Yeah.
Which is a completely different signature to the dimensions, and a completely different signature to the... It's signature, I think signature is the right word. Even personality is the right, another way of describing it. And because the source entity was created by the origin, again, the source entity is an individualized unit of origin energy. And that also makes it easier to talk to the origin, because I am part of that lineage, as you are. There's like a lineage, origin, source entity one, because I'm calling our source entity one,
right,
and then us. So I'm part of that lineage. But when I talk to the other source entities, and I'm currently talking to the third aspect of source entity seven, that's an interesting conundrum.
You're speaking a different language.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're speaking a different language. We could say it that way. I mean, it's a different language kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's right, yeah.
Until you go spend time in that quadrant or whatever and learn that language or that vibration. Yeah, you're over here in this one, so that's where...
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting that although I'm calling these entities Source Entity 1, which is our home source entity or our God, Source Entity 2, 3, 4, 5, through to 12, I've noticed that I've been led in a logical pattern that's given me the easiest route out, as it were. So every time I go from one source entity to another, I'm like using them as stepping stones to develop my ability to go further away from God, from our source entity, as it were. and become more adaptable to the different dimensional signatures, different frequency signatures that are attributed to those different source entities.
Well, what do you learn by speaking to the other ones, the other source entities? I mean, what do they do? They have things that are different. I mean, obviously, than what ours does, I guess.
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, the manuscript for Beyond the Source illustrates some of those communications. I'm working on the second part of that now. Which has got me on Source Entity 7. But the interesting thing is, and I'll use one of the source entities as an example, Source Entity 5. Source Entity 5 didn't create a multiverse. It didn't create any other entities, any smaller individualized units of itself to populate a multiverse. It stayed as a singular entity. And therefore, it gave me a lot of information about the origin. And one of the things that was really interesting about this was it explained more about their origins past and what happened before the source entities themselves were created. And when I first started talking to the source entity, I went further than the source entity and went and started to talk to the origin. I had a picture of lots of origins, like 13 origins, and that really confused me because I thought, well, how can I be going past? Mm-hmm. How can you go past the origin? The origin is the absolute, the all, and that really disturbed me because I was.
How big is big?
I was wondering whether I was not really understanding the information.
Mm-hmm.
But then I found out from Source Entity 5 that the origin had created 12 of itself, given all of the same conditions that it had experienced, to see whether they could evolve and learn and pass back that learning to itself. But for whatever reason, that failed, and it could never reproduce what the conditions that made it become sentient. So it then changed its philosophy and then created the 12 source entities within itself, giving them rules and an idea and an understanding as to why they were created and rules to work with. But so I understood then that okay, there was these twelve origins, and then the source entity said, well, the origin has seen a future, an event space where all the individualized units of the source entities become equals to the source their creating source entity, and that happens across all of the different source entities, and all of those become equal to the origin. And then the origin and the source entities evolve again or rise through its own evolution again. And I thought, well, that's interesting. How can it do that? How can it become bigger than it is? And then in this part two of Beyond the Source, I've got some more information where what I've started to understand now is when the origin created those 12 origins, it created them outside of its own sphere of understanding of self. It was still within itself, but they were outside of its understanding of self. So as it's starting to evolve and understand and learn, it's still only not even 1% of it's not even mapped 1% of itself. So when you put these origins outside of itself, you put them outside of its own understanding of self. So when this future event space, to use a linear description of event space, it sees everything becoming equal with itself. Everything starts to expand beyond that area within the origin that it currently knows and starts to investigate that bit more of it, of the origin self. Is that confusion?
Yeah, that's deep.
Oh, yeah, that's it. That's what we keep getting.
And you may have said this, and I completely missed it, but what's the purpose of all of this?
Did
you get an answer to why?
why it all began, or why in the beginning?
Very simply put, the origin is the absolute, is the all, and has become sentient and self-aware. And when it starts to investigate itself, it starts to learn, and as a result of that learning, it evolves and becomes something else. And it wanted to accelerate that process. In doing that, it tried to do it by using duplicates of itself, which failed, and therefore it created the source entities. So they can experience and the lower level of the origin itself to experience and learn and evolve, and therefore pass that evolution onto the origin. And to accelerate that, the source entities, in most cases, created a multiverse and populated it with even smaller versions of themselves to go into the really minute detail of the environments that is ultimately the origin, to feed back into the source entities and feed back into the origin so that the origin can evolve even further.
Is it deemed that by breaking down to the smaller parts that maybe it could go faster or bigger?
Learn more quicker?
Something like that?
Yeah, I mean, now I know that it's not even maps 1% of itself. Then you start to understand that to enable it to map more of itself, it's got to evolve. And it needs to get down to that minute detail. And it can't do it on its own. That's why it created the source entities. And the source entities can't do it on their own generally. So that's why they created the environments to allow specialized units of themselves to experience the real minute detail.
Well, that kind of makes, and this isn't fair to the listening audience because they haven't seen the drawing. That drawing I do, and it's like it's so important to say that beginning dot, which is the consciousness of the person, they're like, it's barely there. It's like to show the perspective or the proportion, you know, of just how, and like you're saying, it's only 1%, and that's the source entity to the origin, you know, and then to take it down, the drawing I do is the consciousness to the source entity, basically, you know? So
just a little tiny dot.
Mm-hmm.
It's to put it into a perspective that we might understand as human beings. If we consider that the recognized universe with all the galaxies in is an interesting way of describing the origin, and then we come right down to planet Earth, and planet Earth is equal to one of the source entities. And then the subatomic level is equal to where we are. And then beyond the subatomic level is where we're investigating. And that will give you an idea of how far down we're going to try and help the source entity understand itself, and then therefore allow the origin to understand itself.
Wow.
That's rather like I write in my books about how he became curious. He wanted to learn more, so he sent everybody out to learn and then bring it back. It's just different wording, simpler way to so we could understand it.
Yeah, I think this is really interesting because there is, in the physical universe, certainly on Earth, there isn't one human being who can describe it all. Not one of us is able to take on board the real big picture. We've all got what we think is our big picture. We've all got little parts, minute parts of the really big picture. So we have to take on board that everything that Dolores has done, everything that Julia is doing, everything that I'm doing, everything that the other authors are doing out there, in giving information about spirit is little parts of the picture.
Right.
And that sometimes mankind doesn't get it at all. So the same information has to be presented to us in a number of different ways from different angles to give us the opportunity to understand it. Because sometimes we don't understand that, for instance, a football is a football. We might think it's an ice cream, to use a strange analogy.
Right.
Yeah, we need to have different ways of understanding things sometimes to understand the bigger picture. So there's
different people have different ways of their concepts. Their minds form concepts or understand concepts. So they have to have all the different angles.
Well, that's what I've told in my work, though. They said that you would never know it all. It's impossible while you're in the human body. You could never have all the answers. Mm-hmm. And they said it's not the brain. It's the mind does not have the concepts to understand a lot of this. So they're giving us more and more information to we can think about, but we will never know it all. Of course, I think Guy is getting close.
Guy's being pie.
thank you for those kind words, Dolores. But I'm very conscious of the fact that I'm only picking up not even a single grain of sand on the beach.
Yeah. So imagine that. You know. So whenever, I mean, like you said, so that just shows you. That's what they've shown me. Is like we barely cracked the door open. It's like it's barely shedding a little bit of light. Just imagine what it will be when we actually have the door open a little bit. You know, I mean, like you said, you've got a grain of sand of information. Imagine what is out there. I don't know if we can imagine it, actually. So,
yeah. I mean, one of the ways I did explain to me, and I had an interesting diagram, was that if we considered ourselves as being, you know, an energetic state equivalent to all of the data on the World Wide Web, and then we think about all of the computing power that holds that. And then we think about when we incarnate in the physical body, part of us is squeezed into this small biological vehicle. And to enable us to do that, we have to go so far down the frequencies that we start to lose the communication ability, that the massive communication we have normally is squeezed down to a single wire of communication. Then, you know, if we then think of ourselves as a computer, if a computer tries to access all of the World Wide Web at the same time, we would just crash.
Right.
It simply doesn't have the memory space to do it. So, you know, that's a good example of describing it.
That's what they said, it'd be overwhelming. Yeah. You can't have it all. That's why.
Right. Yeah. That's a good analogy.
Mm. Well, and also on top of that, I mean, they also used, I mean, the source entity and Byron also used it, the symbology of saying, well, people who channel, like myself, people who move mediums, they use effectively the spiritual version of Google. And we go out there and we ask questions and we get the information back.
Yeah.
We'll be limited based upon that information.
Mm-hmm.
And we only get one, if we take that spiritual Google response and we get one page, we've got maybe 20 or 30 different answers to choose from. And when we only pick the one, then it's only one side to the coin, as it were. And the coin has got millions of sides to it, or billions of sides, trillions of sides to it.
Mm-hmm.
So we only get little. So when people say, when spiritualists say that I'm in contact with spirit and I know what's out there, well, that's just ego talking, because nobody knows exactly what's out there. We know little bits of what's out there, so we should all work together to help to piece together that bigger picture and create, you know.
Can it be that you're only getting what you're resonating with at that point, what you're able to, so it's like that's why, okay, that's your truth, so to speak, at that point, because that's what you are
what you
able,
can understand.
Right, maybe something like that.
If you get too much, it'd be overwhelming. You couldn't handle it anyway.
Yeah, that is a really true statement. We can only deal with the information presented to us in ways that we can understand, and that is why I receive the information in terms of engineering methodologies. Although in actual fact, a lot.
That's why the questions are so important, because you'll only get the question you ask determines where you are.
Right. That's why I say the question determines the level of information that you will get.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it wouldn't do any good.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's absolutely right, and it sometimes that's, you know, when I'm working with the source entity or the origin or the other source entities, I ask the same question two or three times, and I feel a bit stupid sometimes asking these questions, and I sometimes get almost a sarcastic response back. But the thing is, sometimes you've got to do this to get.
Mm-hmm.
Clarity on what's being given to you, to make sure that the information that I'm receiving or other channels are receiving is real and is robust, because that's the most important thing, is the information we get must be robust in an understandable sort of way, and then we can get it in ways that can be understood by mankind, as against being totally and utterly indescribable. I mean, I'm sure Dolores has had concepts and you, Julia, have had concepts come through where intuitively you know that you know it, but you just don't have the vocabulary, either the spoken vocabulary or the mental imagery, to explain
it. A lot of people read my books and they'll say, I know this, but I don't know how I know it.
Yeah, and I remember in one of the classes, somebody kept asking questions, and I got a visual, but like you said, I couldn't get the words to explain it. And then they told me it's not important. He couldn't understand it anyway. And I tried to explain it to the person that, not that they couldn't understand it, but that wasn't important. And he's like, but it is important. I must know everything. And it was like they were going, you don't have the mind capacity yet. You know, it's just not there.
Okay. So, all right. And Guy, we've come up to the hour. We're going to have to sign off.
That went by really fast.
Oh, it did. We started a little about 5 or 10 minutes later, but we have to stop on the hour or they're going to pull the plug. But thanks a lot, Guy, for staying up so late with us.
That's absolutely no problem. And thank you very much for inviting me onto your show and getting a chance to speak to yourself and Julie on the subjects.
We'll let everybody know real quick, too, that you're going to be appearing at a few of our stops that we're going to be doing in the U.K. next month.
Really. We're going to be over there.
So if anybody wants to come and meet Guy, that's what, he'll be, it's at Birmingham and Bristol, and what's the third place?
Cardiff. The third place is Cardiff, yeah.
So people will get to meet him.
Yeah.
But if anybody out there is interested in the book, it's The History of God, and you can get it on our website if you want to check on that. Mm-hmm. It's Ozark Mountain Publishing, OzarkMt.com, OzarkMt.com. If you're interested in the book, The History of God.
And this will just give you a tiny taste of what this book is about. I mean, it's a real
mind bender.
Fascinating, deep, but you do it in such a good way, Guy, to explain it. So
okay. Well, we're going to have to sign off, and we'll be seeing you in a few weeks. So now you can go get some sleep.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure talking to you both.
And thanks everyone for listening tonight.
Good night.
Good night. Bye.
Bye.